translation. This is the impression. While I am engaged in the business of killing Lord Vishnu, I go down to the planet Earth, which is flourishing due to Brahminical culture and a Kshatriya government. These people engage in austerity, sacrifice, Vedic study, regulative vows, and charity. Destroy all the people thus engaged. Purport by His Divine Grace, Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Hiranyakashipu's main purpose was to disturb the demigods. He planned first to kill Lord Vishnu, so that with Lord Vishnu's death, the demigods would automatically weaken and die. Another of his plans was to disturb the residents of the planet Earth. The peace and prosperity of the residents of Earth and all the other planets were maintained by the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnyam Mayashishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashah. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them, the four divisions of human society were created by me. Unquote. Of all the planets, on all the planets, there are different types of residents. But the Lord recommends, referring especially to the planet Earth, which is inhabited by human beings, that society be divided into four varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. Before the advent of Lord Krishna on this earth, it is understood that the earth was managed by the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. The duty of the Brahmanas is to cultivate Shama, peacefulness, Dana, self-control, Tatiksha, tolerance, Satya, truthfulness, Socha, cleanliness, and Arjavan, simplicity. And then to advise the Kshatriya kings how to rule the country or planet. Following the instructions of the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas should engage the population in austerity, sacrifices, Vedic study, and adherence to the rules and regulations established by Vedic principles. They should also arrange for charity to be given to the Brahmanas, sannyasis, and temples. This is the godly arrangement of Brahminical culture. People are inclined to offer yagya because unless sacrifices are offered, there will be insufficient rain, which will hamper agricultural activities. By introducing Brahminical culture, therefore, a Kshatriya government should engage people in performing yagya, studying the Vedas, and giving charity. Thus the people will receive their necessities for life very easily, and there will be no disturbances in society. In this regard, Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 3.12, In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yoga, supply all necessities to man. But he who enjoys these gifts without offering to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. Unquote. The demigods are authorized supplying agents who act on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Therefore, they must be satisfied by the performance of prescribed yajnas. In the Vedas, there are different types of yogis prescribed for different types of demigods, but all are ultimately offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For one who cannot understand what the Personality of Godhead is, sacrifice to the demigods is recommended. According to the different material qualities of the persons concerned, different types of yogis are recommended in the Vedas. Worship of different demigods is also on the same basis, namely, according to different qualities. For example, the meat-eaters are recommended to worship the goddess Kali, the ghastly form of material nature. And before the goddess, the sacrifice of animals is recommended. But for those in the mode of goodness, the transcendental worship of Vishnu is recommended. Ultimately, all yogis are meant for gradual promotion to the transcendental position. for ordinary men, at least five yogis, known as Pancha Mahayogya, are necessary. Translation again, please repeat. When I am engaged in the business of killing Lord Vishnu, go down to the planet Earth, which is flourishing due to Brahminical culture and a Kshatriya government. These people engage in austerity, sacrifice, Vedic study, regulative vows, and charity. Destroy all the people thus engaged. Om Agena Tadamanda Siyagana Tadashadakaya Chakshira Maitanina Tasma Shukadarayama. We've been hearing a series of verses in which Hiranyakashipu is preaching Vedic wisdom to his family members to console them over the death of his brother Hiranyaksha. And then, after pacifying them by the science of the soul as being eternal and distinct from the body and mind, encouraging them to give up their lamentation over the death of Hiranyaksha. Hiranyakashipu then turns to his demoniac associates and entourage and tells them in the previous verse that when the root of a tree is cut and the tree falls down, all the branches and twigs automatically dry. And thus, when I have killed the diplomatic Lord Vishnu, the demigods, for whom Lord Vishnu is their life and soul, will also lose their life and wither away. This is a misrepresentation of Krishna's own words in the first of the nutshell verses in Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarasya prabhava mata sarvam prabhatate iti mato abhidanti mam buddha bhava samamita. Where Krishna gives the peace formula. I am the root of all existence, and everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. This is the peace formula. So Hiranyakashipu has taken Krishna's own words from Bhagavad Gita, his own philosophy from Bhagavad Gita, and is at this point in his narration revealing his own motivation, which is to kill Lord Vishnu, and by so doing, or rather in conjunction of so doing, telling his associates, go down to earth and destroy all those who are engaged in political culture and Kshatriya principles. Srila Prabhupada presented us with Krishna's own words and Krishna's own purpose in Bhagavad Gita as it is. And the time that Srila Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, there was hundreds of translations of Bhagavad Gita. But unless one is a pure devotee and is in perfect harmony with the will of the Lord, he cannot present Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's own words, according to the will of the Lord. But Krishna's own words will be tinged by one's own interpretation and motivation. Unless he is free of motivation, being inspired only to glorify and to represent the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Hiranyakashipu's motive was to kill Krishna, kill Lord Vishnu, and then himself become the Lord. And this is the underlying motivation in every conditioned soul. And even conditioned souls will use Krishna's own words to justify the rebellious mentality and activities, as we see being revealed here in the conclusion of Hiranyakashipu's speech to his family members and entourage. So he understands the principle that by watering the root of a tree, the whole tree will flourish, meaning that when we offer our worship, our love, and devotion to Lord Krishna, who is the very root of the tree of life, then the whole tree is nourished and will flourish. What does this mean? That by love, when we cultivate and develop and offer our love to Krishna, our love is extended to all living entities in creation, who are the branches, leaves, twigs, and flowers on the tree of life, for which Lord Krishna is the root. And conversely, by severing that root, then everything, everyone is diminished and suffers. Srila Prabhupada in his teachings was very keen to reveal the motivation behind those personalities who present themselves as authorities but are misleading the people with some unspoken motivation. And Srila Prabhupada was even very emphatic, being very protective of the devotees, that we not read other books than those presented by those in whom we have faith, are strictly following the purpose and the spirit of the parampara. Because there is a demon named Palambashura, who is the thief in disguise, whose real motive is to steal the self away from oneself. And this, on one level, means any kind of pseudo-religious teachings, scientific theories which are divorced from the real science of the soul, or ultimately, the Mayavad. And there are different types of Mayavadis. There are some who come right out and say, that I'm God, you're God, we're all God, which is another way of saying there is no God. But the subtle danger is that Mayavadis, who are envious of Krishna, and that envious mentality will contaminate and pollute and destroy anyone who is affected by their teachings. But oftentimes, Mayavadis will say the same thing that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that bhakti is the highest path, worship of Krishna is the supreme worship. And when we think that this sounds just like what Gurudeva says, and place our faith in such words, we become subtly gradually contaminated by the mentality of the person who's presenting the philosophy. And then, when we become qualified for the most intimate knowledge, we find out the conclusion that beyond all this maya of bhakti and Krishna and the deity and the holy name is the unmanifest, non-differentiated, uncharacterized nothingness of Brahman, which is our goal to enter, which is a destination worse than death, because it is death for the soul to enter into a region where there is no bhakti, where there is no devotion, where there is no relationship with Godhead, which means there cannot be relationship with anyone. And the Lord reveals himself in and through relationships. And so long as there is any contamination of pride or false ego or envy or enmity, there cannot be relationship with Godhead. So Hiranyakashipu is advising he's ordering his associates, go down to earth. He's focusing his antagonism on the planet Earth, because that is the only planet from which one can attain the supreme destination of Goloka Vrindavan. And in pursuance of that goal, Kshatriya government and Brahminical culture serves to purify the consciousness of the world and uplift them into our original constitutional position as servants of Krishna. And Hiranyakashipu is saying, when I am engaged in cutting at the root of the tree of life, you go attack all those who are nurturing that tree, nurturing the root of that tree, the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas who are following their instructions. Today is Palm Sunday, a very significant festival in the religions of the Western world. As Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the world. Which appears to be a paradox, because we seem to experience in life that unless we're ambitious and aggressive, we cannot be successful in this brutal age of heavy competition. But what Jesus was saying, and he often would use two terms as designating the qualities of devotee, meek and humble, which we may think are totally synonymous, but they're really not. Meek really describes the attitude we should have with our fellow man, whereas humble is our relationship with Godhead. So, what he's saying, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the world. It seems like a paradox, because it seems like those who are meek are just bullied by the more aggressive, assertive elements in society. But what he is saying is that meek and humble means a willingness to obey and follow the instructions of the Lord. And the instructions of the Lord is basically that we should surrender unto Him. And in the process of surrender, we become healed of our material disease. But that healing takes place in its own time, and that cannot be forced any more than we can impose ourselves on others to force them to change their bad habits or even good habits. Humility is an essential prerequisite for self-realization, and It basically means a willingness, a desire to move our own false ego out of the way. Because what is it that comes in between us and the loving relationship of the spiritual world? And the loving relationships with others even in this world? It's just false ego with its various ramifications. So humility means a willingness to be led, a willingness to accept shelter from the all-merciful Lord Krishna, who's trying to lead us on the path back home. It's also an acknowledging that we just don't have all the answers. It's a willingness to pray, which means speaking to the Lord, and listen, which means a willingness to hear the Lord. And the Lord speaks as the super soul who urges with gentle stirrings a very subtle but persistent voice within. And humility is actually great power, because it means the ability to inspire and impel others to hear, to listen to the message of Godhead. So Palm Sunday is the occasion when Jesus returned to Jerusalem. He had been in seclusion with his apostles because of the conspiracy by the Jewish priests, who offered a reward of 30 pieces of silver to anyone who would turn him in to the Jewish priests, who would then condemn him to death and hand him over to the Roman authorities to be executed. So Jesus was in seclusion, a time of prayer with his apostles, when he received a message from a very loving family of associates, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, that Lazarus was very ill and on the verge of death. And it was surprising on a superficial level that Jesus took 2 more days in prayer before responding to the message. And when he reached the house of Mary and Martha, he was informed that Lazarus has already died. And Jesus asked them, "Do you believe in life eternal, that your brother will continue to live?" And they said, "At the time of the resurrection." And he said, "I am the resurrection. Where have you laid him?" They took him to the tomb, and Jesus began to weep, which superficially appeared to be a lamentation at the death of a loved one, but was actually his sorrow at all the suffering that results from sin in this world. So then he told the people to roll aside the stone which covered the entrance to the cave, which was the tomb to Lazarus. And he turned his face to the heavens and said, "Thank you, Father, for hearing my prayer." And then he said, "Lazarus, come to us." And Lazarus walked out of the cave, still wrapped in his grave clothes. He took off his grave clothes, and Lazarus was restored to fresh new life. And when the Jewish authorities and priests heard this incident, they became seized with fear, thinking that the following he has gathered by his kindness and love is now going to grow, and he should become more of a threat to us, because the Roman occupational government will sense that since all the people are following Jesus, this is a revolution of the Jews, and then we'll be endangered and we'll lose our power and prestige. So they increased their plot to have him arrested. So after restoring Lazarus to life, Jesus was going into Jerusalem for the feast and the festival of the Passover, when Jews from all over the country come to commemorate that event of their ancestors' lives in bondage in Egypt, when the angel protected them from the wrath which befell their oppressors. And then Jesus, on this day, or at least this is the day that commemorates the event, told his apostles, just as they were nearing the city in a little town called Bethany, he told his apostles, go ahead to the village and get this donkey colt who's tied to a post and bring him here. And when his owner asks you what you're doing, say the Lord has need of this simple animal. So they went in the village, found a donkey tied, untied him and started to lead him. And the owner said, what are you doing? They said, the Lord needs this animal. He said, take him. So they put their best colored garments on this little donkey. And Jesus sat on the donkey and began to enter the great place of pilgrimage, Jerusalem, which means place of peace, paradoxically. And then Jesus became very, very grave. And he turned to his disciples and forewarned them that entering this city, I will be betrayed, condemned, handed over to the Roman authorities, tortured, crucified, and on the third day will rise from the dead. And the apostles were all so fearful that Jesus, in a very grave and determined manner, rode into the city. As everyone rejoiced, blessed is he who comes in the name of our Lord. So he entered the city of Jerusalem riding on a donkey. Which is the fulfillment of an old prophecy in the Old Testament. Rejoice, O daughters of Zion. Rejoice, daughters of Jerusalem, your king will come. Your king will return, and the just king he is, he will come in a very humble, gentle manner, riding on a donkey. Because he is the prophesied king who would come and establish the prophesied kingdom. But he did not come like a king of this world, riding on a war stallion with armor and weapons. He came in a very humble manner, on a very gentle creature who personifies humility and gentleness, a donkey. And this also revealed what kind of kingdom he had come to establish. He had not come to conquer lands like Hiranyakashipu. Actually, Hiranyakashipu wasn't like conquerors of this world like Napoleon and Alexander the Great. He conquered whole planets. But Jesus came to conquer the hearts of men. By love, which is actually the greatest force there is, because it unites us, the source of all power, Lord Krishna. So, humility is the willingness to surrender. and to be led by Krishna, which is our only redemption from this land of bondage. And it also means patience, because it takes time to assimilate the spiritual message, which completely it affects a total paradigm shift, which takes time to assimilate. And every individual is unique, with unique conditioning and unique purpose and unique circumstances, with unique abilities. And everybody is moving in a different way, at a different pace. And humility means that willingness to accept the lead of Godhead and to accept others as they are and to appreciate them for whatever they're willing to do in the service of the Lord. Patience and perseverance can overcome the mountains of conditioning that have come between us and the loving service of the Lord. The jiva soul, with the empowerment of maya, has imprisoned himself and built a wall which is so formidable that we can't even escape our own conditioning which we've brought upon ourselves by our desires to be independent of the Lord. And therefore surrender is necessary for Krishna to set us free. And perseverance to accept his time. And the perfection of patience and perseverance is the life of Srila Prabhupada, who in a 12-year period changed the course of the history of the world, which may appear to be just some tidal wave of evangelic spirit, but was in actuality the crowning glory of a whole lifetime of preparation. A life of humility and dedication. As Srila Prabhupada at the end of his manifest in this world was very emphatic, knowing what would come, that you can show your love for me by how you cooperate together to push on this movement. Or, as he said here in Vrindavan, on one morning walk, when he turned and looked back at the devotees and became very grave, as if he could understand what the future would hold, which he did, said, requested the devotees, just cooperate with each other to manifest this new Vrindavan project. So, the spirit soul is pure consciousness, part and parcel of Krishna. But when that pure soul develops an envious attitude towards the Lord, he becomes entangled and enslaved in the avidya potency, also known as maya, which binds him up. And subordinates him. If we're not under the control of Krishna, the jiva soul is too tiny to be independent, we're placed under the control of this external energy, the avidya, which means nescience, energy, potency. And under the influence of maya, we come to believe in illusion as being reality. And in that illusion, the illusion is that we forget Krishna, that he is the root of all existence. And only by worshipping and serving him can we or anyone actually flourish or live in the real sense. And under the influence of that avidya potency, that nescience energy, the living entities, the different energies within that realm of nescience have a tendency to compete and conflict, to place themselves in the position of the center and the controller and the enjoyer Whereas in reality, the living entities who are competing for supremacy and trying to conquer one another are all conquered by an agency greater than themselves, which is ignorance and nescience. And the supreme glory of this bewildering energy of the Lord is that the living entities think they are free and independent, because Maya keeps them in this cloud of thinking that they're independent, even when they're completely being controlled by a power greater than their own. And the only way and means to overcome this power of the illusory energy is surrender to Krishna, the master of that illusory energy. So surrender, on one superficial level, means just to follow instructions and do what you're told. But on a deeper level, it means renouncing the fruits of your activities, grossly and subtly, even the credit for your activities. And in the attempt, in the endeavor to surrender to Krishna, many tests and challenges will come. Not to defeat us, but to make us strong. And if we're actually serving only for the glory of God and the pleasure of the Vaishnavas and spiritual master, we will never actually be discouraged or disturbed, knowing that whatever comes into our lives in the course of our attempt to serve and please the Lord is all Krishna's arrangement. It's all His mercy to purify us from the effects of our conditioning. And really, surrender means an internal movement of the heart to want to please the root of all existence, Sri Krishna. And this necessitates humility. Or as Mahaprabhu summed up in his own words, Trinadapi Sunichena, Taradapi Sahishnana, Manida Manadena, Kirtaniyasada. That to chant the holy name of the Lord, which is our only means of success, necessitates humility like that of the grass, which is just willing to be trod upon, and forbearance like that of a tree, which is always willing to extend itself to others, not desiring, expecting anything in return, offering respects to others, expecting no respect in return. This is love, and this is sacrifice, and this is the basis of cooperation, which is so difficult in the Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, when the governing deity of the age is quarrel and hypocrisy personified, and casts a spell which induces all living entities to quarrel, giving them all means and reasons to quarrel. But if we have a higher purpose in life, then we will understand that our only ability to cooperate in an age of quarrel is by humility and the willingness to offer respects to others and not desire any respect in return. So, Maya, the illusory energy of the Lord, will test an aspiring devotee in various ways. So Maya is illusion. And she will cast this spell to encourage the devotee to become lazy and lax in their spiritual principles, and sleepy when it comes to hearing the Bhagavatam. And then we become weak in our reciprocation with Krishna, and we can easily fall back again into the spell of illusion. But there's a worse danger in the spell of Maya, in the influence of Kali, And that is that we will lose respect for others. Because without respect, there cannot be cooperation. There cannot be a mood of unity and harmony, which is the very medium in which Krishna manifests himself and bestows his empowerment. And our only real shelter in the age of Kali from the influence of illusion and conflict and quarrel, our only shelter is the holy name, which has two applications. Japa is the individual chanting of the holy name, an introspective journey into our own being for the purification of our own hearts. And that is meant to culminate in the fulfillment of Sankirtan, coming together in a congregational chanting of the holy names, which purifies our relationships by placing Krishna in and between us. And Krishna manifests himself in the congregational chanting of the holy name. Kali Kalera Namarupa, Krishna Avatar. In this age of Kali, Krishna manifests himself in the congregational chanting of the holy name. So our relationship with Krishna is revealed in Harinam Sankirtan. But Kali, the father of lies, and the personification of quarrel and hypocrisy, who rules over this age, will cast his spell and give everyone every good reason not to respect others and not to cooperate with others. And the best logic and reason why we should not be respectful and we should not cooperate. And if we fall to this dictation of the master of quarrel, hypocrisy, then we will lose the shelter of Krishna. If we become weak in our own sadhana and slip away from the devotional path, we will still have the assistance of those who are on the path. And in that assistance of the assembled devotees, there is so much goodwill and love and empowerment coming from Krishna, who works through his devotees to the extent that they are cooperating in a mood of humility and mutual respect. So even if we become weak individually, we still have the collective empowerment of the Vaishnavas if we remain meek and humble and respectful and cooperative.